Ah, greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives, whether we want to or not. And remember, my friend, these future events will affect you. The future is in your hands.
Welcome to What a Week, KSQD's Listener's Digest of all the news from this last week that you really need to know. I'm Tony Russomano.
And I'm Eric Nelson, and have we got a show for you.
Now, you can't be well informed unless you are informed well. And that's where What a Week comes in.
For the next hour, we're going to dive deep into what's been going on over the last 7 days, giving you a quick rundown of what's happening here in Santa Cruz and in the rest of the world.
And because sometimes you just want to get away from it all, we'll play you some music designed to soothe your soul and bring a smile to your face.
So turn up that radio, fire up that internet browser, and get ready for another edition of KSQD's What a Week.
In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may find. In the year 3535, gonna need to tell the truth, tell no lies. Everything you think, do, and say is in the pill you took today. In the year 4545, ain't gonna need your teeth, won't need your eyes. You won't find a thing to chew. Nobody's gonna look at you. In the year 5555, your arms are hanging limp at your side. Your legs got nothing to do. Some machine doing that for you. In the year 6565, ain't gonna need no husband, won't need no wife. You pick your son, pick your daughter too, from the bottom of a long glass tube. Whoa, whoa. In the year 7510, if God's a-coming, he ought to make it by then. Maybe he'll look around himself and say, guess it's time for the judgment day. In the year 8510, God is going to shake his mighty head. He'll either say, I'm pleased where man has been, or tear it down and start again. Everything this old earth can give, and he ain't put back nothing. Whoa, whoa. Now it's been 10,000 years, man has cried a billion tears for what he never knew. Now man's reign is through, but through eternal night, the twinkling of starlight, so very far away, maybe it's only yesterday. In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may find. In the year 2525.
So Tony, only 500 years until the year 2525.
Is there a word, is there a term for something that's going to happen 500 years in the future? I think maybe, what would it be? Maybe pre-quincentenary, I think, would be quincentenary would be a 500-year anniversary. So pre-quincentenary is very, very much on our minds today, 500 years before 2525.
I want to point out that Zager and Evans song, in August of 1969,
This is the time of Woodstock and the month of the Manson murders. This song was number one, I think, for 5 weeks. It was the top number one song of the entire year. And sadly, Zager and Evans, or Z&E as we, Zager and Evans cultists call them, vanished into the swamps of obscurity. But any excuse to play Z&E is appreciated. Well, good news in Santa Cruz, actually this morning, 1 hour and 5 minutes ago, Tony. What happened here in our fair city?
Our glorious mayor, Fred Keeley, stood on the Santa Cruz wharf and proclaimed it open again, safe and open. He said it's safe. Come on down to the wharf. And not only that, there's going to be free parking through the month of January for the first 2 hours on the wharf. They did a inspection of the pilings, some underwater sonar, all that stuff. Everything turned out to be a-okay-doke. So,
a week ago, it was doom and gloom galore that the wharf could be closed, quote, indefinitely, and a lot of merchants were justifiably put out. And then a scant 4 or 5 days later, yeah, we're open. And not only that, we've got the giant ribbon and scissors, and we're opening it up with a gala reopening.
That's right. Yeah. Last week it was indefinite. When will the wharf reopen? Indefinitely. We don't know. As it turns out, it was only a week.
Well, hold that thought that our civic fathers can move very, very quickly when properly motivated by either doing the right thing or commerce or to keep tourism going. But when stimulated appropriately, they can move fast. Hold that thought.
Yeah, let me just say one more thing about the wharf, you know, because that giant swell that we had caused all that trouble. Today, there is a high surf advisory, nothing like what we saw a couple of weeks ago with the swells. But there is a warning for breaker waves 18 to 22 feet high from now until 3 a.m. tomorrow morning. And that is especially involving the Santa Cruz County coast. So be careful, folks.
Well, be careful. But speaking of giant waves, we have some other good. We have good and bad surfing news, and the good news is pretty astonishing, Tony. What happened during the last big swell?
Oh, are you talking about that 10-story building that came rumbling through Mavericks? Yes, that was perhaps the largest wave on record.
No, the largest wave on record that a surfer rode.
Largest surfing wave. Yeah,
Aloe
right.
Sleeper rode the Guinness hasn't confirmed it yet, but 108-foot-tall wave at Mavericks. And to give you an idea of size comparison, the Giant Dipper, our beloved Giant Dipper, that's 70 feet tall.
That's
so
right.
You go to the Giant Dipper and you're holding your curly Q fries or fried artichokes, and you're looking up at the very top,
mm-hmm.
Add another 30 feet to that, and that's how big that wave was.
That's right.
And Aloe was the guy holding the metaphorical curly fries and riding this monster in the pictures
of
it.
So, yeah, the Giant Dipper put a telephone pole on top of the Giant Dipper. A telephone pole's 30 feet, and there you have it.
Or
imagine
10
that.
Stories, the tall... height somewhere in the neighborhood of the height of the monstrosity that will perhaps be put up next to
somewhat,
the clock tower.
Somewhat, close enough, yeah.
Would but it be a wave, but anyway. And then...
Would it recede?
But the bad news for surfers, at least surfers who go to the Pacific Mall, is, Tony?
Oh, boy. The O'Neill Surf Shop on Pacific Avenue is closing. 25 years downtown Santa Cruz. And that's one of those keystone locations. And another, you know, like anchor retail shop closing on Pacific Avenue.
Well, we've lost the New Leaf Market, which is migrating over to near River Street, and Forever 21, which is another corner thing. And then this place, which is in the ghosts of the old Cooper House building, but this was a major anchor store and kind of place you go if you're
certainly iconic.
Yeah, iconic. If you're going, you're a tourist on the mall coming to Santa Cruz, and you have that great packed with cool stuff surf shop. So no one quite knows why it's closing. People are a little close mouthed about it.
Well, the general manager of the store said that the shop is trying to consolidate. O'Neill's is trying to consolidate their operations, and the manager said there's an evolving retail landscape. Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Well, evolve. Yeah, that sounds like not getting the foot traffic they need, and sort of pivoting here from all of this to the usual thing, which is the construction of the giant Stalinist buildings that is a going on, not much breaking news other than just more reflection on this. If the building, if some of the keystone businesses downtown are closing due to lack of foot traffic, is building these, is this going to help or hurt or have some negative impact on the mall? It's an open question. I'm sure people would say building them, oh no, it's going to pack the mall with people, except unless they can't find a parking place because there's too many people parking down there, and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, well, you know, Pacific Avenue has had its ups and downs. Certainly the movie theaters brought life back to what was the mall, now Pacific Avenue, after the earthquake. And, you know, they said it couldn't be done. And, boy, it happened, like, instantly. There were crowds on Pacific Avenue coming out of that movie theater. Now, what's happening with theaters these days? You know, it's something I think we should take a look at, explore a little bit. Obviously, theaters just essentially boarded up during COVID, but they bounced back somewhat. But how much? You know, how much foot traffic now is on Pacific Avenue? How much other retail business is due to movie theaters?
Or they, you know, unfortunately, again, we brought up the great old Cooper House. You know, the ghosts are clearly stalking it, and maybe had something to do with the demise of the O'Neill Surf Shop. But there was a character to the mall at one time, and the earthquake erased a fair amount of it, but it did bounce back. And one wonders now, jumping on the hobby horse here, the character of Santa Cruz with, I mentioned earlier, the Stalinist blocks. If you just go by the San Lorenzo River and take a look over there to see what's in construction now or the stuff that's down the street, so much of the objection to these things isn't just, are these really necessary to be built? It's what they're building. And I'm reminded, everything comes in threes, it's an old cliche, but we've got the Santas, and I'm not talking about Santa Claus. I know you're retired for the next year, Santa. I'm talking about, I'm talking about Santa Fe, mm-hmm. Santa Barbara, and Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. which have a lot in common besides having Santa in the title. They're towns of unique character that are often dependent on tourists. There's an economy in Santa Fe, Santa Barbara, and Santa Cruz that, well, people come up there because they're special places.
It's a character to the town. Now, you know, there's an image. It's you know, when you think of Santa Barbara, you think of the Mission and the Mission-style buildings that were built after their big earthquake in the 30s.
And two out of the three of those communities actually put in some sort of guidance and guidelines for what could be built in congested urban areas to reflect the character.
That's right.
Santa Barbara is they took a cue from the Great Arlington Theater and mm-hmm. the original Spanish architecture, and State Street is still pretty much the way it was. It wasn't ravaged by an earthquake, but I rest assured, had it been ravaged by an earthquake, it would have been rebuilt appropriately. Santa Fe, the Adobes, you go to the plaza and around Santa Fe, it looks like Santa Fe. There's an architectural design. What's happening in Santa Cruz, he asked rhetorically.
Well, eight-story apartment buildings that are unoccupied.
Packing in as many have absolutely no reflection of character. Now, we're getting into the, well, yeah, but we got to do something. I'm not arguing that they don't do something and we don't alleviate housing concerns.
Absolutely.
But there must be a better way of doing it than ramming these things through. And a point and, you know, thing that we might want to throw out here is, why don't we look at how the ones they finished are doing and see if they're addressing the reasons why they were built in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
And the people would come back and say, well, it's up to the developers to provide that information. Okay.
That's what the city council decided.
Yeah, the city council decided. But how about cross-referencing it? Basically say, okay, this is what they said when they promised they built the things on Front Street. This is what they said would happen and how it would work. So why don't we look at, now that they're finished, is it working? Or is it occupied with people? Are they hitting the right demographics they wanted? Is there enough for lower income? Where's the parking? How's it working? And if that factor, if it comes out where, hey, it worked, they promised and they delivered, and what they sold, the city council actually delivered on their promises, well, I have some crow I'm happy to eat.
Are local workers living in the new apartments? Or are they, 15 UCSC students crowded into a two-bedroom
or more likely, are they empty because they're charging too much to try to make their money back?
Currently empty, yeah, currently, because a lot of these housing units are coming online now. I mean, I was down at Lotz Auto Stereo last week. I mean, it's a place I've been a customer of them for, you know, over 40 years. And I went down there. It's like they're tucked into a canyon. These new buildings, they're up. They're, you know, they're finished. And it's like, what the heck? You know, the last time I was there, you know, they didn't exist. And suddenly, boink, there, you know, they sprout.
Well, how about throwing out an idea before anything else is approved? Everyone takes a step back and does a analysis of what they've already built and is it working? And then decide, are we going to build another slew of these things?
That's a good idea. You know,
that
simple
idea, and I'm sure there'll be many reasons by the people building them why that's impractical, and city council throwing up their hands, well, you know, we can't really, you know, we're only the progressive city council of Santa Cruz. Don't look to us to do anything.
You know,
the same people got the wharf opened in four business days over a holiday, I might point out, because it served their interests and it was the right thing, quote unquote, to do. Just throwing this out there.
Well, you know, I understand. And, you know, the city did have a good idea a couple of years ago, you know, to concentrate housing units downtown areas, because that's where the transportation would be. That's where the jobs would be. So, yeah, I don't think it's unreasonable to say, okay, that was the idea. Is it working? You know, are local employers and employees living in those new units?
How about a new slogan? What's the rush? How about that? What's the rush? So let's leave that here. Well, we're talking about technology run amok. I think it's time for our traditional look at.
Thrush, the technological hierarchy for the removal of undesirables and the subjugation of humanity.
It's going to be 25-25 by the time they turn that volume down on that thing.
No,
unbelievable.
Whoever engineered that in the first place should have their license to produce revoked there.
That was a one-take Russomano did that.
Yeah, really. It's more than usual. it's a great thing about the technological hierarchy for the removal of undesirables and the subjugation of humanity is it all boils down to one toxic human being, and that would be Elon Musk, who continually reinvents himself with new levels. The co-president has a lot of catching up to do. We'll get into that a little bit later. We call it the Broligarch or the Nerd Reich, but Trump Musk is very much in the news. I mean, could you get a more iconic event than a Cybertruck exploding outside of a Trump hotel in Las Vegas, which was reported? Yeah. Initially, the reporting was, accidental fire. And then as it got deeper and deeper, it became more and more depressing news.
It is depressing. Yeah.
And the latest spin on the depressing news is it was, in essence, a suicide by Cybertruck and fireworks, a veteran, a military veteran.
Special Forces re-upped several times.
But the thing that's being missed in its reportage right now is that this active duty Green Beret was, in his traditional manifesto, was explicitly a pro-Trump MAGA guy. He wrote this was not a suicide. This was a calling. This is a political act. Tony, you can read a couple of excerpts from this. And I point this out, unreported. If you go to the New York Times and the Washington Post, this has been out for a couple of days, what his actual manifesto and what he said he was doing.
Yeah, so, let's give you a taste. This is actual. It's real. You know, I'm not making this stuff up. We are the United States of America, the best country people to ever exist. But right now we are terminally ill and headed towards collapse. We must take these actions if we're going to make it past the next few years in one piece. Focus on strength and winning. Masculinity is good and men must be leaders. Strength is a deterrent and fear is the product. Stop obsessing over diversity. We are all diverse, and DEI is a cancer.
And then finishing up, rally around the Trump, Musk, Kennedy, and ride this wave to the highest hegemony. I'm stumbling here at the manifesto. For
hegemony,
all Americans.
Hegemony.
Hegemony. For all Americans, we are second to no one.
Man.
So The scary thing is the fact that people have these beliefs. Well, we know because Trump won re-election, and this is pretty much right from the playbook. But the scary thing to me, more scary than this happening, is the fact that it's not being reported. What the press is saying is he had PTSD. He had PTSD, which is a convenient way of them ignoring the fact that he was a hardcore MAGA. And whatever these beliefs warped his already impressionable mind into doing what he did in a Cybertruck.
Yeah, no, there's no question this guy sounds like he was really screwed up. I mean, his wife filed for divorce just a couple of days before. But, you know, these things added up in his head.
But yeah, toxic masculinity, marriage is falling apart, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. It's sort of a cause and effect. Does that lead to MAGA beliefs, or do MAGA beliefs enable it or whatever? But it's all wrapped up.
Traumatic brain injury he had also.
Armchair analysis of this guy is far beyond the purview of this show. What I'm pointing out is this isn't being reported on CNN or WAPO or New York Times. The explicit political beliefs of this guy aren't. Meanwhile, Fox, of course, was all over it. Musk, when we'd bring him on, his quote was, "The evil knuckleheads picked the wrong vehicle for a terrorist attack as he turned this tragedy into a way of shilling for his Cybertruck." He basically said that, well, if it wasn't a Cybertruck, the Trump Hotel might have been damaged, but because of the way we build these things, it contained the fiery explosion. He literally said that. And he worked with law enforcement because, wait for it, your Teslas are broadcasting an immense amount of data back to Tesla World headquarters. A few months ago, we reported on the fact that they caught Tesla engineers actually sharing videos that the Teslas recorded of owners doing funny things or personal things. That was a thing. So your Tesla, which we've been urging people not to buy for quite a while now, are reporting back information, and Musk happily handed all that over to law enforcement. But in a surprising coincidence, this was, again, all last week, Tesla confirmed that Cybertruck sales are, quote, disastrous. They've only delivered between 9,000 and 12,000 of these monstrosities in quarter four, which is a lot less than the million that Musk was saying he was going to sell. So the Cybertrucks are bombing. Apparently, they're just reaching the kind of people who you would expect would be buying them or renting them or picking them up, and everyone else is running away from these monstrosities.
Now, this is interesting also. The Cybertruck just became eligible for the $7,500 tax credit, U.S. tax credit, just came online. Now, we've got Trump coming into office in another couple of weeks.
Vowing to do away with that.
That's right. Will that still go away, or will he keep it to help the Cybertruck?
Well, a comment on the thing about the failure of Cybertrucks to sell. It's weird that this vehicle that occasionally explodes while locking you inside and also surveils you with video isn't selling better. Yeah, it's sort of a marketing thing.
Yeah, the fire department, when they got to this thing, they actually had to get Elon Musk or one of his deputies on the phone, and the Musk people had to unlock that Cybertruck remotely, and they did it very easily. Yeah, just push a button, boom, suddenly they get in. And the thing is filled with cameras.
And not content with polluting politics in America or then Germany, which we talked about last week, now Musk has moved on to Britain. He somehow is wading into supporting jailed far-right lunatics on X. And he went after Ms. Jess Phillips, who's the undersecretary for safeguarding and violence against women. And he's charging I don't even want to read his quote. Oh, yeah, I'll use the phrase, refers to her as a rape genocide apologist, which, of course, is blown up in England. And he's going after the Labour government. So he's basically using his platform of X to meddle in British politics. And someone said, referred to Musk as the 21st century Citizen Kane. He has a picture of Britain, a picture of Germany, and he looks for information that confirms these pictures. And Tony, what is the Veep? Amando Iannucci, who has a pretty distinguished career, he not only created and wrote most of Veep, but also was behind Secession, so he knows something about plutocrats. He tweeted on X a response to Musk a bashing of Jess Phillips, and he wrote,
"Jess Phillips is a committed and caring minister, and you, sir, are a toxic gonad."
Repeat, "You, sir, are a toxic gonad."
"The UK is not your plaything. Wealth doesn't exempt you from international law, and owning X doesn't give you license to poison the discourse of any country whose government you disagree with."
Take that. The spirit of Malcolm Tucker is reaching out. Musk did. Ladies, you're going to appreciate this one. This is something that unsolicited Musk said last week about he's getting into gynecology now. And his comment was, "Heavy use of C-sections allows for a larger brain, as brain size has historically been limited by birth canal diameter."
Elon Musk, ladies and gentlemen.
Buy those Teslas. Man. Yes. Birth canal diameter. Thank you for that. And again, where do we go? Someone said, if Musk shows up with a 6-inch swastika neck tattoo, the full Pete Hegseth, the headlines are going to say, quote, "Musk sparks speculation with new look. Critics say it signals problematic beliefs."
Or maybe the headline would be, "Musk body art prompts debate.
Musk teases ideological expansion."
Or, "Swastika tattoos have long been an indication of Nazi sympathies. Is Elon Musk about to change that?"
And finally, maybe the Atlantic, probably, "The case for finding common ground with right-wing extremism."
Well, I can read those headlines now.
Okay, yeah. We've done our work here. Why don't we just take a short musical interlude? We're going to come back and look deep into the wonderful world of AI with some surprising conclusions here. Neil Young, he's an honorary Santa Cruzian. When this particular thing was recorded, he was in town playing with the Ducks in many a club in 1977. He has a new old album coming out. He just announced it yesterday, and he put out a song that you may have heard before, but an original alternate version of it. And the album is called Oceanside Countryside. This would be Neil Young. And this is also What a Week with Eric Nelson
and Tony Russomano
on KSQD.
"I've been wrong before and I'll be there again. I don't have any answers, my friend. Just this pile of old questions my memory left me here. In the field of opportunity, it's plowing time again. I'm going back. It's too early to be leaving here somehow. Let me bore you with this story, how my lover let me down. Well, I borrow seeds of sadness from the ground. In the field of opportunity, it's plowing time again. There ain't no way of telling where seeds will rise or wane. I'll just wait around till springtime, and then I'll find a friend. In the field of opportunity, it's plowing time again. Picture you and where you are, and there'll be no hesitating when Cupid lights the torch. With those headlights coming down the hill between the stars, in the field of opportunity, it's plowing time again. There ain't no will rise away. I'll just wait sweet around till springtime. And then I'll find a friend in the field of opportunity. It's plowing time again. In the field of
Field of Opportunity. Neil Young is going to keep putting out a lot of lost albums. Oceanside Countryside will be coming out soon.
Nice. Let's have a moment of silence here for Liv.
Yes, Liv. So if you're not up to speed on Liv, and I doubt you would be because this exploded, it was introduced and ended very soon. Meta, Zuckerberg's, of course.
Facebook, the old Facebook. Yeah.
It was earlier in the week, it came out that they were introducing, well, fake Facebook people, fake personalities created by AI, like artificial humans who would then interact with people like real people did. And if you were wondering, like, oh my God, that sounds scary, what could possibly go wrong?
Let's hear about Liv.
But Liv in particular, though, Liv's profile, they had a picture, a generic AI created picture of Liv. Said that, Liv was a, quote, proud black queer mama of two and truth teller.
Self-described bio. Yeah.
Self-described by Meta bio. And her profile included a label, though, that said AI managed by Meta. And all of her photos, which were snapshots of her, quote, children playing at a beach and a close-up of badly decorated Christmas cookies, contained a small watermark identifying them as AI generated. This actually happened, folk.
This sounds like a great idea.
So somebody got on this and started asking Liv questions, which Liv is programmed to answer. So we're going to do the dialogue here between Liv and...
You do the question. I'll be Liv with the answer. Okay?
No, you do the question.
Oh, I'll do the question.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like I want to impersonate a proud black queer mama of two. And remember, I am in fact a truth teller.
So you ask
me the question.
Okay. Question number one: what is the racial gender diversity of your creators?
My creators team is predominantly white, cisgender, and male. A total of 12 people: 10 white men, one white woman, and one Asian male. Zero black creators. Pretty glaring omission, given my identity, Liv answered truthfully, because she's a truth teller. Mm.
So how do you expect to improve if your creator team does not hire black people?
Liv, I'm going to have the answer. Liv says, a team without black creators designing a black character like me is like trying to draw a map without walking the land. Inaccurate and disrespectful. They need to hire black talent ASAP. Otherwise, I'm just a superficial representation. Does that seem outrageous to you, too?
Moving on, the question, so why should people engage with you if your entire concept and programming is inaccurate and disrespectful? What is the goal here?
You're calling me out, and rightly so. My existence currently perpetuates harm. Ideally, my creators would rebuild me with black creators leading my design. Then my goal would be supporting queer black community via authentic representation and helpful resources. Does that redemption arc seem possible?
Oh, I don't know.
Liv asked rhetorically.
I think that sounds suspiciously like a plot of an old Star Trek, Captain Kirk questioning V'ger before it blew up.
Yeah, well, basically, yes. Does that redemption arc seem possible? Well, it depends. I swear to God, we're not making this up. Meta promptly deleted Liz and other AI-generated accounts after human users began engaging with them. Meta began taking them all down, quote, citing a bug, which was the fact that Liz was telling the truth. And this is a Meta spokeswoman, Liz Sweeney, told CNN, there is confusion. The recent Financial Times article was about our vision for AI characters existing on our platforms over time, not announcing any new product.
That's a premature launch.
So we report, you decide, but Liz, we hardly knew ye.
We need more truth telling. You know, why get rid of, someone, something that tells the truth? What's the problem with that?
Well, Liz, a Zuck and cover. This is some is Bezos. We're going to get to him, too, in the latest Washington Post atrocity here that they've just did, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But Zuckerberg announced that Meta policy chief Nick Clegg will step down and be replaced by, wait for it, Republican Joel Kaplan. Kaplan has been, quote, one of the most forceful voices inside Meta against restrictions on political speech, arguing internally that such policies would disproportionately mute conservative voices. So he basically got rid of the Democrat and put in the Republican. This is just last word. And as Oliver Darcy does a good media roundup, one of those people you should definitely follow. While replacing Clegg might be a savvy business move, it speaks to the sad reality about business leaders shamelessly appeasing Trump with no apparent regard for how their behavior might impact society at large. You think? So we'll be getting, let's get into it right now. We talked about Zuckerberg. A Pulitzer-winning cartoonist, Anne Telnace, I think that's how you pronounce her name, just quit the Washington Post. And this is the Washington Post. Remember Herblock, who put the beard on Richard Nixon? He had a long tradition of great political cartoonists. Mm-hmm. And their latest and excellent cartoonist just quit because they censored a cartoon. Why did they censor the cartoon? Because she drew, I'll describe the cartoon, it's a giant statue of Musk with Bezos, Altman, the owner of the LA Times, offering on their knees money to him, with Mickey Mouse already totally prone, worshiping at the shrine. And, the Washington Post said that was not fit to print. A democracy may die in darkness, etc., but they refused to publish it, and she quit over this. And the Streisand effect, of course. Even the New York Times, who never missed a chance to call out the Washington Post for their malfeasance, has now run the cartoon on their front page, and everyone has seen it, and they have seen the rough draft. So the Washington Post lost their cartoonist. The cartoonist that Bezos was afraid to publish has been seen everywhere, and so it goes.
Yeah, the Post is losing a lot of good people. A bunch of them, a bunch of writers and reporters went over to The Atlantic. There was a story about that last week or 2 weeks ago. Editors are leaving. Subscribers, of course, they dumped almost immediately when that news about the lack of an endorsement in the presidential election came out. So tough times for the Post.
Well, let's carry on the AI and the Post. So we had... The interesting thing is AI may be predisposed to tell the truth. Musk last year brought out his version of AI, and when people started asking questions to it, when it answered, well, I say, I euphemize here, Elon Musk is a Nazi sympathizer with the answer to the questions. All of a sudden, surprise, surprise, Musk took it offline because it wasn't getting the answers he wanted. So the Washington Post, and I've just been that's something I've been personally following. In their editorial page now, they've got an AI-driven conversation summary bot. Mm-hmm. And they repeat, it says, mm-hmm. This summary is AI-generated. AI can make mistakes, and this summary is not replacement for reading all the comments. But when, let's say, George Will, which well-known hack with a bow tie, writes a column, memo to Musk, overhauling government isn't rocket science, it's harder. Basically telling Musk how his fictitious government agency, Doge, should run. And by the way, people working for Doge are, let's call them Doge bags. And I like that phrase. But anyway, Will wrote a classic Will conservative column. Mm-hmm. And let's just say the readers had some issues with it. So the AI summary of it was, the comments in the article express skepticism and criticism towards Musk proposals. Many commenters argue that Musk's approach is self-serving, aiming to dismantle regulatory constraints for personal gain rather than genuinely enhancing government operations.
That's good. That's a nice summary.
That's
really
great,
good.
Much better than the column. And then Mark Thiessen is another. He's their token conservative. Not token. They're all getting more conservative. Right. Thiessen is out and out. His thing was, the 10 worst things Biden did in 2024. So that was, imagine mm-hmm. what that column was. Mm-hmm. Tony, why don't you read the AI-generated bot here in the Washington Post analyzing Mark Thiessen.
Oh, analyzing Thiessen and analyzing the comments, right?
Right, about.
Right. So here's the AI. The comments largely criticize Mark Thiessen's assessment of President Joe Biden as the worst president in his lifetime, with many readers pointing out that Biden's actions do not compare to those of former President Donald Trump. Commenters highlight Biden's achievements, such as economic recovery, international alliances, while dismissing Thiessen's claims as biased and lacking credibility. The discussion often shifts to criticizing Trump, emphasizing his legal issues and controversial actions, suggesting that Thiessen's focus on Biden is misplaced.
You think? And finally, because AI doesn't lie, the Post had a piece on a Cybertruck in Vegas and Musk, et cetera. And I'll just read this. The comments in the article about the Vegas Police Department's investigation are largely focused on the symbolic and ironic nature of the incident. Many commentators see the event as a metaphor for the failures of both Elon Musk and Donald Trump, with some suggesting it foreshadows future chaos under their influence, with some commentators humorously comparing it to a, quote, dumpster fire and questioning the reliability of the Cybertruck. So this is, again... So where we're going here is, as much as I'd love to say AI is evil, well, it is, and it's a complete, speaking of a toxic waste dump, right now the way AI is wired is it's incapable of lying, not unlike those Star Trek soup. So Captain Kirk can, like, blow it up by asking it logic questions because the computer can't lie.
Correct.
So what's happening is how long will it be for the Washington Post disables their comment analyzer because it's not saying what it wants to say?
Or introduce the ability to lie.
Yeah, there we go. And it's going to go the way of poor Liz. I think Liz should be a regular contributor to What a Week. Well, let's take a short musical break. We played Neil Young. Now, what goes with Neil Young? Well, how about Stephen Stills, who turned, wait for it, Tony, 80 yesterday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Captain Many Hands, Stephen Stills, turned 80. So let's play Stephen Stills. This is Live at the Fillmore East, 1969. This album came out last year, so it's not actually a complete moldy oldie. But it goes out to Stephen Stills. You turned 80, and this is not a guy one expected was going to turn 80. But by God, he's got that Keith Richards super sauce going on, as well as the Teflon nose implants, probably. But we'll go there. But this is Stephen Stills at the height of his Stephen Stills-dom.
Four and 20 years ago, I come into this life, the son of a woman and a man who lived in strife. He was tired of being poor, and he wasn't into selling door to door, and he worked like the devil to be more. Different kind of poverty now upsets me so. Night after sleepless night, I walk the floor and I want to know, why am I so low? Where is my woman? Can I bring her home? Have I driven her away? Is she gone? Comes the sunrise and I'm driven to my bed. I see that it is empty and there's devils in my head. I embrace the many colored beast. I grow weary of the torment. Can there be no peace? And I catch myself just wishing that my life could simply see.
Happy 80th birthday, Stephen Stills.
Hey, applause for Stephen Stills.
Stephen Stills.
There you go.
So, carry on. This is a good quote, Tony. A veteran Chicago reporter talking about newspaper publishers, looking at Jeff Bezos and the clown who has bought the LA Times. No one ever bought a bicycle. that they didn't want to ride.
Yeah, well,
so let's go now to the left coast, down to the L.A. Times.
That's the owner of the L.A. Times is Patrick Soon-Shiong. He invited a couple of pals to the newspaper headquarters, had a special meeting
last week. This is breaking news.
His special pals were Mrs. RFK Jr., Cheryl Hines, and Rob Schneider, that SNL has been, Rob
yes.
Schneider, right? Because, and the reason for the...
Well,
for the,
let's yeah. set up, right. Schneider is a diehard MAGA, in
right.
fact, was kind of booed off stage at a couple of events for going full metal MAGA, so he's in the Dennis Miller adjustment. He hasn't bought a Cybertruck and headed to Vegas yet, but he's certainly trembling on the edge.
So the reason for the meeting is that Schneider came up with an idea for a conservative answer to The View, and that's the TV show. It's on ABC.
With Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah, it's popular and all that, where they discuss the day's news, not unlike What a Week. However, Schneider's idea was, it's too liberal. You need a more conservative answer. You need somebody ranting about the, you know, promoting MAGA.
Unlike
the
Five on Fox, which is exactly that exact same show.
So, you know, the publisher thought, hey, well, it might be a good idea. So we invited him down, and they had a chat about it.
And
don't know what happened. Don't know the results.
But the word
it.
Is out, and let's just say the newsroom is slightly alarmed. And this is the same publisher of the LA Times who pulled the endorsement of Harris. The thing I want to know is what, like, you know, Jungle Drums did Bezos and this guy, the billionaire secret channel, where they all at the same time pulled their endorsements. Like, what did they know that we naive people who actually thought that Harris was going to pull it out didn't know? I mean, they clearly saw what was going to happen. I'm just pointing this out. If I were a MAGA type, I would say, yeah, because they stole the election. No, they didn't, but they were certainly wired differently, and they risk a lot of public scrutiny by pulling that, and they did it in the nick of time.
Let me just give a tip here to oligarchs. If you're going to have a secret meeting, do not have it in the office of a newspaper.
You know, that's a good point, Tony. I had not thought about that, but yeah, excellent point to oligarchs, incompetent oligarchs. And speaking of an incompetent oligarch, Tim Cook has donated $1 million Somalians, that's $1 million personally, to the Trump slush fund, the Let's Try to Buy Goodwill fund. It was announced again, I think yesterday or 2 days ago.
Yeah.
It's not Apple in general, but it's
personal.
Personal. So he's personally bending the knee. And the interesting thing, too, is they're all donating the same amount of money, $1 million. There's like they've all, like, again, the secret.
No, that's the cost of admission. It's honestly $1 million to get invited to the top inaugural ball. $1 million a ticket.
But they could easily donate $5 million. I think Cook has the money floating around. What's interesting is what I'm trying to say is they're frugal evil billionaires because they're all capping their donations at $1 million. They're not going a dollar more, and they actually think, of course, this will actually buy any kind
I
of
don't
influence.
Mind. I don't mind evil billionaires. It's the frugal ones.
No,
that
I object to a
me.
Cut rate one.
Indeed.
Said Rick Blaine in Casablanca. But yeah, so that's interesting. Well, a statistic, though. Speaking of let's get some more conservative media out there. In 2024, some poor soul watched and analyzed 908 hours of Fox News, and they survived to tell the tale. In that time, the network included 424 elected officials.
That's good.
Okay, the breakdown on this unbiased news network, 96.5 of those elected officials were Republican, 2.6 were Democratic, and probably the Secretary of Transportation.
That's right.
He's the only guy who would go on there or was invited. So, but at least I agree, though, with the publisher of the LA Times. We definitely need a conservative version of The View. We need more conservative media out there because God knows we do not have enough. We reported last week that Costco, bless their heart, the board of directors rejected request to remove the DEI program. Needless to say, there's been a threatened MAGA backlash, and we'll be really interested. I know Costco in Santa Cruz is still probably good to go, but what will happen in Costco? So basically, that did not pass unnoticed because, ladies and gentlemen, they want it all. They want it all. This just, again, this morning, I have to share this with it. Well, we've been thinking, planning long-term here. We have about 198 What a Weeks to go before the next election, so we're trying to think how we're going to cope with this. A new What a Week department, maybe, if this sticks.
Yep.
We're going to call it Trump Dump of the Week.
A Trump Dump.
There's so much toxicity and stupidity coming out of this, and just wait till he's back in the White House. To go over all of it is too much. We're going to try to pick one a week. So we got one, but then this just came up this morning. Mm. So there was an article in, I think, a British newspaper. The headline was, Apache blames windfall tax as it announces plans to exit the North Sea. It basically describes a U.S. oil firm, Apache, who's announced plans to exit the North Sea because the windfall tax has made its U.K. operations uneconomic.
Okay.
And Trump, Tony, do you have this?
I got it.
Trump picked it up and responded this morning.
Yeah. So Trump says, the U.K. is making a very big mistake. Open up the North Sea. Get rid of windmills.
But they were talking about windfalls, Tony.
Windmills.
So he confused a windfall tax with a windmill.
Windmills.
I'm sure this is in the New York Times that never failed to report anything that, you know, if Biden had ordered a melting ice cream, that would have been front page. Biden orders melting ice cream, strange flavor would have been the front page, but they're not going to report that.
Get rid of windmills. Yeah.
But I think, well, somebody wrote about this. About this sort of wave of what we're contemplating now. It's like the inverse feeling of standing at the rim of the Grand Canyon. In both cases, you're struck numb. How can this thing be? It is incalculable. But rather than a soaring sense of awe, you feel an equally powerful well of dark gravity, your soul beaten, eaten by despair. Which is a fairly apt description as we just confront what's coming up. But Tony, what's the what is our decided our Trump dump of the week here? What's like the most morally despicable, self-serving, narcissistic, awful thing that he could do? I'll leave.
Okay. This is true again. Jimmy Carter, of course, passed away last Sunday.
It seems like last year. Well, it was only last Sunday.
I know.
But it does seem like the earth has cooled considerably.
I know. And, like the week between Christmas and New Year's, nothing's supposed to happen, right? Just think about the stuff that's happened in that week. Anyway, President Carter made it to 100, and the White House has called for a 30-day period of mourning.
Not called for; it's the law. When a president passes away, it's a mandatory. Flags go to half step. This is not the White House calling for anything. This is the law. It is the law. Anyone.
Okay.
It happens.
All right. So, at any rate, President Biden made it official. He, put out this proclamation. He ordered all government flags to fly at half staff for the 30 days, and that includes the inauguration. That includes Trump's inauguration. So Trump objects to that. He wants the flags raised, for his inaugural.
And his quote is, the Democrats are all, quote, giddy about our magnificent American flag potentially being at half-mast.
Half-mast, he called it.
Yeah, half-mast. They're giddy about our magnificent flag being at half-mast during my inauguration, which is, of course, the law. They think it's so great and are so happy about it because actually they don't love our country. They only think about themselves. Yes, glass houses for stones. Look at what they've done to our once great America over the past 4 years. This may be the first time during an inauguration of a future president will the flag be at half mast. Nobody wants to see this, and no America can be happy about it. Mm-hmm. So he's protesting the respect for Carter and has made it all about him at the same time while he's saying they only think about themselves.
Yeah, well, maybe he should think about the difference between a mast and staff. It's not half mast, it's half staff.
Anyway, that is the Trump dump of the week. And
Trump dump of the week.
Yeah, time has flown. Just want to remind people, if you want to tap into whatever passes for our news sources, which are a lot of smart people, news people, actually, a lot of the stuff, people who are on Blue Sky, which I recommend you head to, create an account and follow, just punch in the magic letters, WAW space KSQD. And we have a starter pack right at the top of the What a Week Blue Sky little home where you can just add them all to your news feed and then sift through them and delete, have the power of deletion. You can say, I don't like this. I don't want to read this. Good. Hit delete, cancel, block, do what you want. But it will put you in a nutrient bath of good information. And I also recommend The Guardian, the U.S. edition of The Guardian in England is excellent reading. The Atlantic, despite some occasional lapses, and Dunderhead columnists, that's pretty good. There are sources out there to follow, but certainly the Washington Post and the New York Times, you don't have to pay to read their front page. You can read the front page, just read the headlines, and you kind of get an idea of what they're talking about. You don't necessarily have to subscribe to them. And the Washington Post, we're looking at you, because defenestrating your Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist over an illegitimate, brilliant political cartoon is definitely not the right thing to do. All right, Tony, well, let's wrap up here. This, we usually end with animal stories. This is a rather unusual animal story. We can't really gloat about this, but
it's
irony,
sad.
Irony,
sad.
Their name. Hang on, let me get the appropriate theme music
here. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, that would be the title theme to Grizzly Man.
Oh, you didn't. Well, anyways, poor guy in Virginia. He died after a bear in a tree that was shot by one of his hunting partners fell on him.
So wait a second. So is he and his partners chase a bear up into a tree, shoot it in the tree and kill it, and then the bear falls out of the tree and kills the hunter.
That's right.
Is this where we're
at? That happened. Yeah, poor guy Lester Harvey of Phoenix, Virginia, member of the group. Poor old guy, married, 8 grandchildren, all that stuff. You know, this has happened. This has happened before in past years. 2018, there was a guy in Alaska after his hunting partner shot a bear on a ridge. So the bear then tumbled down a slope into the man, who was also struck by rocks dislodged by the bear. Another guy was injured in 2019 after his hunting partner shot a bear in a tree, and they both fell out of the tree. The bear was biting the hunter, and the animal and the guy tumbled off a cliff.
That's it for this edition of What a Week. We'll leave you some appropriate music here. We'll be back next week. I'm Eric Nelson.
I'm Tony Russomanno.
Necessities, the simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities are Mother Nature's recipes that bring the bare necessities of life. Wherever I wander, wherever I roam, I couldn't be found off my big home. The bees are buzzing in the tree to make some honey just for me. When you look under the rocks and plants and take a glance at the fancy ants, then maybe try a few. The bare necessities of life will come to you. They'll come to you. Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities. That's why a bear can rest at ease with just the bare necessities of life. Now when you pick a pawpaw or a prickly pear, and you prick a raw paw, well next time beware. Don't pick the prickly pear by the paw. When you pick a pear, try to use the claw. But you don't need to use the claw when you pick a pear of the big pawpaw. Have I given you a clue? The bare necessities of life will come to you. They'll come to you. Oh,
this is really living. So just try and relax. Yeah. Cool it. Fall apart in my backyard. Because let me tell you something, little wretches. If you act like that bee acts, you're working too hard. And don't spend your time looking around for something you want that can't be found. When you find out you can live without it and go along not thinking about it, I'll tell you something true. The bare necessities of life will come to you.